This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is just the start. There may be others out there that we're not already aware of. We may see more depending on the reports that will come to the Secretary General as we go on.
That's Paul Masatili from South Africa's ruling African National Congress on officials implicated in corruption stepping down from government posts. Details coming up also. Latest talks on Ethiopia's massive Nile Dam project ends without a consensus. And in Ghana, one non-governmental organization is making a difference by rescuing children from work and getting them to school. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The latest talks on Ethiopia's massive Nile Dam project have ended without a consensus with Egypt and Sudan on a draft deal that was supposed to be presented to the African Union. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the troubled talks with Abdurrahman Saleh, former Egyptian ambassador to Turkey and a former Egyptian diplomat to the U.S.
Egypt made it very clear in the last round of talks that it will continue the negotiations. It was Sudan, actually, who withheld the agreement to continue to go back to negotiation until resolving some technical issues. I have to explain to your audience, however, what is the disagreement about? It is about Ethiopia's decline to agree to a yardstick with which we can measure the significant harm brought by the dam to the people of Sudan and Egypt. And these technical negotiations, trilateral technical negotiations, were supposed to reach an agreement on what is the definition of this stick yard. The flow of the Blue Nile from Ethiopia to Sudan and Egypt totals 74 billion cubic meters. The Ethiopian dam is planned to store 150% of that flow. The flow is 49 billion cubic meter, and the dam is planning to store 74 billion cubic meter, 150%. That is the core of the problem.
The Sudanese delegation stressed that dialogue is the only way to reach a deal. What other options does Egypt have to get out of this vicious circle?
Already Egypt pursued inviting the U.S., the World Bank, to mediate a solution. And they did. And they produced a compromise agreement to which Egypt agreed and initialed, actually, Egypt and Sudan initialed that American draft. Ethiopia didn't show up in the meeting, even to look at it, to consider it. So this was one avenue. The second avenue was going to the Security Council, because this could threaten the international peace and security, because it threatened the survival of the people of Egypt, who depends for 95% of their water need on the Nile water. The third option is for Egypt to ask the whole international community to exert pressure on Ethiopia. And there are other many pressures that could be applied to Ethiopia to try to make them change their mind.
That was Abdurrahman Saleh, former Egyptian ambassador to Turkey and a former Egyptian diplomat to the U.S., speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Several ruling party officials implicated in corruption in South Africa have stepped down from their government posts. fraud related to the supply of medical equipment to treat COVID-19 has apparently resulted in the theft of millions of dollars. Government officials allegedly awarded tenders to colleagues and others connected to the African National Congress, or ANC. Darren Taylor has more.
The scandal has heaped pressure on President Cyril Ramaphosa from both allies and foes. 3 years ago, he ran a campaign based on fighting graft, and he duly ousted his allegedly corrupt predecessor, Jacob Zuma. But now, some in the Ramaphosa administration also stand accused of graft on a grand scale. Some have now left their posts on instruction from the ANC's National Executive Committee, or NEC, of which Paul Mashatile is a member.
This is just the start. There may be others out there that we're not already aware of. We may see more depending on the reports that will come to the Secretary General as we go on.
But the Secretary General Mashatile speaks of is Ace Magashule. ANC insiders say he's the leader of a dirty camp within the party, bent on stealing public money, as they allegedly did when they worked for Zuma. Magashule didn't respond to requests from VOA for an interview, but he earlier gave cryptic answers to the state broadcaster when questioned about his alleged link to the latest graft.
Let us not be diverted from dealing with the corruption which is actually happening in the COVID. Let's talk about the billions and trillions and millions of money which is actually being got by whatever, whoever, through corrupt activities and whatever you may actually want to say.
Some of the money Magashule is talking about allegedly ended up in the pockets of two of his sons. They were awarded state contracts to supply COVID medical equipment, despite their companies having no previous experience in this.
I don't want to enter the space where I have to talk about my children. The position of the ANC is that we must deal with corruption. It doesn't matter who it involves, whether it's a politician who is well-known, whether it's a businessman who's well-known, whether it's a leader of the ANC who can influence and whatever.
Magashule's alleged involvement in corruption sees the media frequently describing him as a mafia boss. He says it's all lies spread by his political enemies.
Many leaders of the ANC have done business with government. I've not done business with government myself as the leader of ANC. And today the same people are the people who are saying, no, there is a ethical morality here. They have done business themselves.
His attitude is, if you've got evidence I've committed crime, charge me.
I'm just saying the law enforcement agencies, the organs which will do whatever they have to do in terms of the law and the constitution of South Africa, let them do their work.
On paper at least, Magashule, himself linked to plunder, has been tasked by the ANC with dealing with supposedly corrupt colleagues. Party insiders say all is not as ridiculous as it seems, and Ramaphosa's strategy will become clearer in the near future. Give the president time, is Mashatile's plea.
We actually are very concerned about the unity of the ANC, but we don't want to keep the unity by avoiding to act on wrongdoing. I think it will be wrong for the ANC to do that because that will damage brand ANC.
But critics point out this isn't about brand ANC. It's about brand South Africa. After all, it's not the ANC's money that's being stolen. It's citizens' taxes. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Zimbabweans who fled their country or went into hiding to escape an ongoing government crackdown on dissent have launched a campaign to mobilize African countries to support the troubled populace. The campaign, dubbed Zimbabwe Africa People's Solidarity Network, under the theme Zimbabwe's Crisis is Africa's Crisis, was recently launched in South Africa. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
wearing face masks inscribed hashtag ZANU-PF must go or hashtag Zim Lives Matter reflects the gospel that these Zimbabwean campaigners are preaching to their African brothers. They are also urging fellow Africans to post print, audio and video speeches and messages on social media denouncing the state-sponsored abductions, killings, arrests and brutalization of citizens by the army and police in Zimbabwe. Tulis Hanana is the spokesperson of the movement. He went into hiding when it became clear authorities are after him on allegations he's part of those pushing a regime change agenda. But he says the government, ruled by the ZANU-PF party, has resorted to a vicious violence against unarmed citizens who also are coping with growing hunger and economic wars.
We are going to be hosting this as what we call the Zimbabwe Solidarity Day. It's a day where people are going to protest in their own individual countries in solidarity with Zimbabwe to say we are standing in solidarity with Zimbabwe. So that's how Africa is going to come in. We want different African governments to put pressure on the Zimbabwe government to solve the crisis.
Msongelwa Ndlovu, who is part of the movement, says Africans have been embracing their campaign.
The response has been good. We have made available a number of masks and T-shirts, and we're hoping that the message will reach all stakeholders, especially governments and political leaders throughout Africa. With regards to the African Union, we hope that this time they will be forthright and deal with the government of Zimbabwe in a more firmer way.
The movement is urging those engaging in solidarity action to share their activities on social platforms to keep maximum pressure on the government. It is also calling on different groupings to gather resources to support victims of government brutality. A number of South African government officials and those of the ruling African National Congress have openly admitted there is a crisis in their neighbor that needs attention. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has shrugged off the allegation, saying there is no evidence of arbitrary arrests, torture and killings by state security agents. Human rights organizations say a number of activists, opposition political leaders and journalists have been abused and detained for airing views critical of the government. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Experts say an international convention universally ratified in August will give children legal protection against the worst forms of child labor. In Ghana, children are still used in hazardous labor, especially in fisheries and the cocoa industry. One Ghanaian non-governmental organization is making a difference by rescuing children from work and getting them into school. Stacy Knott reports from Accra.
When Stephen Ardo goes out on missions to rescue children on Ghana's Volta Lake, he thinks about his own experiences being forced to fish when he was a child. Ardo has been working for a decade with Challenging Heights, an organisation that rescues and rehabilitates children trafficked from a coastal area of Ghana to be used on a lake hours away. Child labour is a complex issue, but generally comes down to poverty and ignorance, Ardo says. He finds parents are manipulated by traffickers with false promises of sending a child to school, when in reality, children as young as five are forced to work. The NGO focuses on advocacy and economic empowerment, so parents do not feel they need to send away their children. Education, health and behavioural support are offered at a rehabilitation centre. Challenging Heights also works with parents with whom the children are eventually reunited. Member countries of the International Labour Organization ratified the Worst Forms of Child Labour Convention in early August. But Ardo says more funding and political will is needed to stop the problem.
I'm still happy that the convention has been ratified, and that's going to support the way that we are doing. That's going to be a source document for us to also refer to when we have difficulties. But we should still find a way of making those who ratify it responsible, not just sit in the office and ratify, but just come to the grounds, work as a team with the people who are implementing it, and make sure that it's happening as we want it to happen.
Child labour in Ghana and neighbouring Ivory Coast's cocoa sector is also an issue. The International Cocoa Initiative works with cocoa communities to eradicate child labour through advocacy, education and livelihood support. Deputy Country Director Prince Giamfi says it takes time to change attitudes about child labour. Giamfi says during an interview on Skype, he hopes the universal ratification will spark more action from the government and private sector.
Now that every country has ratified this convention, we all have to double our effort in eliminating child labour in all our supply chain, in all our communities, in everywhere we have children. But children plays is not in doing activities that are hazardous.
Eugene Nakoleti of Ghana's Department of Labour says in recent years the country has enacted policies to combat child labour, including building schools in cocoa communities and giving free school meals.
Government has come out with a lot of interventions to address the issue of poverty and then the issue of illiteracy. So the schools are open, schools have been created, so that the distance travel to the school is also reduced.
Koleti says he believes the interventions in place now will pay off. For people like Ado, who have survived child labour and are devoted to rescuing and rehabilitating children and getting them back with their families, ending child labour cannot come soon enough. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
Somalia's Ministry of Health and the UN Children's Fund say the nutritional level of women and children in the country has improved over the past decade. For millions of Somali children under age 5, however, sound nutrition remains out of reach. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
For the first time in decades, the Somali government has been able to conduct a survey across the country looking at the nutritional level of children under the age of 5. The survey, conducted between December 2018 and July 2019, shows higher vitamin and mineral levels in children and thus credited to improved food security and a higher status for women in the country over the past decade. Melanie Galvin, the Chief of Nutrition at the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, discusses the situation.
There's certainly nutrition programs scaled up over the past decade as well that provide vitamins and minerals, provide access to counseling for breastfeeding. So there's some things that certainly we would see nutrition-wise. There are non-nutritional items that non-nutritional aspects that we can see that will improve the nutritional status of a population, like more education for women, economic development, better employment opportunities, people marrying at a later age.
The survey, conducted jointly by the Minister of Health and UNICEF, collected blood and urine samples of 2,172 people, with 1,961 of the children below the age of 5, to check vitamin and mineral levels in their bodies. According to the survey, the nutrition status of women and children has improved since 2009. 9 in 10 infants are breastfed, and the prevalence of both stunting and wasting has decreased. Galvin says while many Somali babies are breastfed, only a third of them are exclusively breastfed for 6 months.
We've seen that exclusive breastfeeding seems to be going backwards, and that is something that we really will take a very detailed look at. Because it's something, breastfeeding is well practiced in Somalia. It is most women seem to breastfeed, and we just have to teach them that exclusive breastfeeding is the way to go. So it's a matter of modifying their current behavior.
Osama Abdi is a doctor at the Kalkal Hospital in Mogadishu. He says more parents now are open to improving their children's health by seeking health services, which is a marked improvement from the past, where many stayed at home without help.
We can remarkably see some change. If you see when a mother comes to the clinic with her child malnourished, you treat that child, she comes with the next child, she comes herself, she calls the family and the rest of the family. That already has changed the community narrative of not going to the services or just staying at home. We can notice the change related to the nutritional status, but these changes cannot be noticed so early.
The researchers are calling for intervention to improve women's nutrition before and during pregnancy and to encourage breastfeeding for the first hour of life. They're also urging the interventions to improve infant and young child feeding practices and to improve vitamin and mineral intakes. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Journalist Hopewell Chi Ono has been finally granted bail on the High Court in Zimbabwe after more than 6 weeks in prison. Reporter Kusai Zinawashi has more from Harare.
He is facing charges of inciting public violence linked to a protest that was planned for July 31st but was squelched by COVID-19 regulations and a strong security presence. His previous bids for freedom on bail had been fruitless, prompting widespread international calls for his release. Critics of the government say Chingono's crime may have been exposing high-profile corruption. Doug Coulthard is part of Chingono's legal team. He explained the conditions for his release.
In short, bail has been granted on $10,000 to be deposited, surrender passport, title deeds, to reside at his given address, not to post on his Twitter account or to create any other Twitter account to use to incite the holding of mass demonstrations for whatever purpose until the end of his matter.
Analyst Vivid Gwede says Chingono's release was long overdue.
His release comes after a lot of pressure from the international community and from the local community of activists and Zimbabweans. It is also, in a sense, a way to preempt the delegation from South Africa. And we expect that most of those who are arrested will be given bail before that delegation arrives in the country.
Chingono's release comes just hours after Transform Zimbabwe opposition leader Jacob Ngarivume was granted bail at the courts. His charges are similar to Chingono's, after he is alleged to have called for mass demonstrations on the 31st of July. Chingono will be required to report to the police on Fridays as part of his many bail conditions. Coulthard says while they are happy about his client's release, he is aware that the bail conditions are overly strict such that they affect his constitutional rights. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
The leader of the Sudan Liberation Movement has rejected the peace deal signed by the country's transitional government and a rebel coalition. Abdelwahid Dur dismissed the deal, saying it fails to address the root causes of Sudan's conflict. From Paris, Noor told VOA that the agreement reached by the government and the Sudan Revolutionary Front will not achieve peace, saying a secular state must be established where all citizens are created equal. Another group, the SPLM North, led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu, which had started talks with Sudan's transitional government, later on refused to talk with the government's chief negotiator, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. They say the general committed crimes against civilians for years under the rule of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway are urging the leaders of the SPLA North and the Sudan Liberation Movement to engage in serious negotiations with the government to achieve comprehensive peace. This edition of Africa News Tonight, I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.